searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome into the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Hi there. Mark Congleton here, driving the big crazy bus. Your sometimes humble host for this sometimes hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And it is Friday. I just say that for those of you who are having trouble keeping track of things, because every day is feeling pretty much the same for a lot of people today. But it is Friday. The weekend is upon us. That means that many people will be making their plans, going places, doing no, they won't be, because government is overreaching and telling us what we can't do. And honestly, I honestly think we are about, I give it outside 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Before people start burning their governors at the stake. It's just, we're already seeing people go to their state houses and protest, people getting arrested, people raising a stink because progressive governors are flexing their progressive muscles and restricting people's freedom. And that's just not going to fly here in the United States of America. It's just not going to. We've been patient. We have been compliant. We have been obedient. We are beginning to see that it was all unnecessary. And now we're getting fed up with it. It's just a matter of time. I myself, my sweet wife Jane and I, we were out yesterday evening, had some errands to run because of some of this insanity that's going on. We live just outside of Birmingham, Alabama. The mayor of Birmingham, Alabama, Randall Woodfin. He's a young guy. I say that because he is. He's a young guy. He's in his 30s, I believe. He's a young guy as far as mayors go. He is also a Democrat. He's a liberal guy. Now, I happen to know some people who have had some dealings with him, and he is, I think, at the core, concerned about what is best for the people of his city. But at the same time, people of the progressive mentality see the best differently than you and I do, and how that's accomplished. And as a result of that, and I'm just relating local news because this is becoming typical everywhere. As a result of this, what we have is an ordinance which has come down for the city of Birmingham. Now, we live just outside of this. We live outside.
Whoa.
Outside, which is why sometimes the internet is really weird out here, okay? We live outside the city of Birmingham. For me to get to downtown Birmingham, it's about a half-hour trip to get into town on a zero-traffic day. It's not where I live. It's near where I live. But because of this edict which has been passed down, now the businesses which are considered essential businesses, and more on that in a few minutes, but these businesses which are considered essential businesses, the employees now all must wear face masks. Everybody should be wearing a mask. Now, Jane has had a mask for a few weeks. We ordered some. If I know you, really know you, and you follow me on Facebook, on my personal page, by the way, if I don't know you, you don't get to follow me as a friend on Facebook. I am not an attention whore who looks for lots and lots of people to be my friend on Facebook. It's just for people I know. That way, when I tell inside jokes, when I do things, they know my personality, and the chances of people getting all huffy and nasty with me are minimized. But I digress. The both of us, my Facebook photo has me wearing the mask. The photo that I have been using here on the Daily Perspective podcast, the live feed on Facebook, and here, let me put that up there. There, that picture is of something it's essentially the same picture with a different face covering. And I have a handful of face coverings like that one, which I bought from some company because I wanted to have them for when I mow the grass, because well, allergies and the like. When I get outside at certain times of the year, I would prefer not to spend the rest of the day taking all kinds of over-the-counter medications just so I can breathe. So that's what I wear. And those sunglasses, those, I can't find them. I've lost them somewhere. I don't know where they are. Anyway, but my Facebook profile photo is different. It is a different thing altogether. And it has a white mask on it. And my wife has the same mask. I ordered a set of them. And she has been told, because of this edict beginning today, the 1st of May, the 1st of May, hats off to my friend Earl, it is required by all of the employees where she works, they all must wear face masks. And they've put up signage all over the place. They're explaining to people that if they aren't wearing a face mask, this is customers, mind you. If you're a customer and you walk into their place of business and you are not wearing a face mask, you will be asked to leave. Now, I don't know if you've tried to find face masks recently. Unless you're willing to pay an incredible amount of money, you're not going to get one anytime soon. Even Disney is in the face mask business. They are thinking forward. This is a side note. They are thinking forward to when they finally can open the parks. And I have a feeling that they may require people to wear face masks because they're selling them. Go to store.disney.com. You will see the pop-up. It'll come up. You won't have to search for it. They have an entire line of Disney-themed face masks. Yes, indeed, they do. Anyway, the reason we were out yesterday is because of this edict that people working inside the city limits of Birmingham, Alabama, must wear face masks if they are in an essential business. And bless her heart, the face mask is, these things just don't, some of them don't fit right. Some of them don't work well. None of them work well, really. But she's complaining about that it keeps coming off her ears. It's pulling her ears down. And we've done what we can to stretch the fabric a bit and to make it a little looser, but still it's not the same. And so she wanted to get some ribbon and some things and to doctor it up a bit so she could actually tie it behind her head instead of it just looping with elastic over her ears. And that way it would stay on. It was more comfortable. It didn't hurt her ears. And she succeeded last night. In the process, we both took our face masks with us and went into Walmart looking for what she needed, wearing face masks. And I got to be honest with you, I felt like a fool. I felt like an idiot. Not because I was alone with my wife wearing a face mask, but because I was out in public wearing a face mask in a place that normally sane people would not. And I was looking around me and it was like the Twilight Zone because I was seeing people everywhere we went, every aisle we went on, people wearing face masks. A few not, but for the most part, people in face masks. Employees in face masks. It was just strange. And this, as we left, I realized was not in the city limits of Birmingham. This was in one of the suburbs called Trussville. And we had one more stop to make. Well, we had two more stops to make. And I digress. Three more stops to make. I had to go to UPS and drop something off to go back to Amazon. And then I went to get the car washed. And then we went to a CVS Drugs because my wife was looking for something else she was thinking of and thought, well, CVS will probably have it. And as we pulled into CVS, she reached for her mask and I reminded her, we're not in the city limits. And she said, oh, good. And left her mask in the car and went into CVS. And she was hoping to find more masks. Nobody has them. Now, all of the employees at CVS are wearing the masks, but you can't buy them from CVS. Okay? Because apparently people are hoarding the masks just like they were hoarding toilet paper. So you can't buy them. They're just gone everywhere. And where you can find them are extremely expensive. And except for, well, like Disney's got, you get a pack of four for $20. They're $5 a piece. They're cloth. I believe you can reuse them and wash them and reuse them. And so Disney's masks are actually a bargain. But they're a pre-order. You can't get them right away. Okay, on to, let's see, the other thing that I was going to mention. As far as essential businesses go, I have been fairly surprised at what an essential business can be. Now, I can understand a car repair service, a place like a car dealership with a parts desk and a repair shop, you know, the automotive, they have a service center. I can understand people with the need to go places having to have functioning transportation and needing to have the parts and the service necessary to make that happen. That I can grasp. I can wrap my head around that. There are other things I can see as well. For example, places where you have to buy home repair things because something is broken. Your hot water heater's out. The plumbing, something's, you've got a leak someplace. That sort of thing. I can understand to a degree. I can understand that. Now, I don't know if you've been to a Lowe's or a Home Depot lately, but they're busy. Oh, they're busy. A lot busier than they would normally be because people are thinking, I got to get out of the house. I think I'll go buy a pack of faucet washers. And they go to Home Depot or Lowe's because they can get out of the house. And when you get there, they've got these things on the floor reminding you stay this far apart from people. They've got them spaced out 6 feet apart and in the aisles. And when you're waiting to you're lining up to pay for whatever you're purchasing, they've got these things standing this far apart. You can't get any closer than that. Hey, they're all over the place. But Lowe's and Home Depot, home centers, they're open. What surprised me was, remember I mentioned I got the car washed? Car washes are open. The one I went to that I've been going to for a while, because they have this like $5 express wash thing. I've been going there for a while. I went there because my car, my Ford Flex, it sits outside. And as it sits outside, it collects a lot of debris. And I do wash it from time to time. But every now and then, I will take it to the cheap car wash. And then when I get home, I'll go back over some, you know, they always miss spots. I'll go over and pick up the missed spots and armor all the tires, you know, that kind of thing. But car washes. Why are car washes essential? It's not like your car will fail to function if you don't keep it clean on the outside. Why are car washes essential? Why is it essential that your car be shiny? Why is it essential? Why? This is what I want to know. And if you'll actually put your brain to it, you'll start realizing that there are a handful of things like that that don't make any sense. The most outlandish of which would be Planned Parenthood clinics. Because, honestly, that's not essential. It really isn't. They mask it in saying that it is women's health care. And that's the big lie about Planned Parenthood, by the way. And if you think they're essential, then you really, really need to do your own homework and stop just eating whatever they're feeding you. Because the vast majority of the money made by Planned Parenthood is made from abortion. The rest of it, contraceptive services and the like, is a tiny portion of the money they make. In fact, if you make an appointment at a Planned Parenthood, if you walk into a Planned Parenthood, odds are they're going to push and push and push and push and push you about an abortion, even if you don't need one. Those who used to work for Planned Parenthood will tell you it's a lot like working at a car sales lot. They learn how to overcome objections to everything. But they're essential. So what's essential and what's not and why? What's the question bugging me today? Why are car washes considered essential? Things that make you go, As we're in the car wash, going through it, watching everything getting sprayed and scrubbed, and those big things spinning around and slapping against the mirrors, and we're talking about, isn't it interesting that the car wash is essential. And the kid, there's a kid, there's always a kid. There's always a kid or some guy who looks like he's from the local shelter who sprays your car down and scrubs the bugs off the grill. You know, that they, I don't know if they do that where you get your car washed, but where I get my car washed, there's a guy who preps your car before it goes through the tunnel, so to speak. He sprays the car. He's got a big brush, and he works over the grill and the hood and gets the windshield and tries to get most of the bugs off the windshield and all that stuff before you actually get into the car wash. And then he hits the back end of the car and gets that spot in the middle of the back of the car that the brushes don't get to. He gets that clean on the way in. Why is the kid wearing a mask? Now, he's not inside the city of Birmingham, as far as I know, but he's wearing a mask. The kid with the spray gun and the brush at the car wash, which is essential. Keep that in mind. It's essential. He's wearing a mask. Can you get the coronavirus from the Dodge Dart? I mean, can you get it from the VW Bug? Are you going to pass it on to the car?
One! All right!
Come on!
Come on!
Welcome back.
Yeah!
It's the Daily Perspective Podcast.
Here we go!
For a Friday, the first day of May, 2020. Oh, wow. Well, creepy Uncle Joe has finally popped out of his gopher hole and had something to say about the accusations against him. He's released a statement regarding scurrilous accusations, allegations that he sexually assaulted a staffer in 1993. And I want to walk through this statement with you. You've probably seen a portion of it on the news. But I have the text of the statement here, and we just need to kind of walk through this. I don't know if we'll get it all done in one segment, but we'll kind of walk through it because I want to give you some reminders of things along the way. Okay? All right. Here's what he says. April was Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Every year at this time, we talk about awareness, prevention, and the importance of women feeling they can step forward, say something, and be heard. That belief that women should be heard was the underpinning of a law I wrote over 25 years ago. To this day, by the way, he was a co-sponsor of this legislation. Whether he actually wrote the law or not, I can't say. Okay? And he was a co-sponsor with a Republican whose name just went blowing right out of my brain. But whether he actually wrote this or not, I don't know. I know his name is on it, but the way things work in Washington is there are staffs of people who write things, and then there are congressmen and senators who skim over them and say, this is all good? Good. And they put their name on it. So when he says he wrote it, I don't know if he did or not. To this day, he says, I am most proud of the Violence Against Women Act. So each April, we're reminded not only of how far we have come in dealing with the sexual assault in this country, but how far we still have to go. When I wrote the bill, few wanted to talk about the issue. It was considered a private matter, a personal matter, a family matter. I didn't see it that way. To me, freedom from fear, harm, and violence for women was a legal right. A civil right and a human right. And I knew we had to change not only the law, but the culture. So we held hours of hearings and heard from the most incredibly brave women, and we opened the eyes of the Senate and the nation and passed the law. In the years that followed, I fought to continually strengthen the law. So when we took office and President Obama asked me what I wanted, I told him I wanted oversight of the critical appointments in the Office on Violence Against Women at the Department of Justice, and I wanted a senior White House advisor appointing directly to me on the issue. Both of those things happened. By the way, the creation of this also created employment for people, more people with government jobs in the Office on Violence Against Women at the Department of Justice, to which he referred. Moving forward, as vice president, we started the It's On Us campaign on college campuses to send the message loud and clear that dating violence is violence and against the law. We had to get men involved. They had to be part of the solution. And that's why I made a point of telling young men this was their problem, too. They couldn't turn a blind eye to what was happening around them. They had a responsibility to speak out. Silence is complicity. In the 26 years since the law passed, the culture and perceptions have changed. But we're not done yet. It's on us, and it's on me as someone who wants to lead this country. I recognize my responsibility to be a voice, an advocate, and a leader for the change in culture that has begun but is nowhere near finished. So I want to address allegations by a former staffer that I engaged in misconduct 27 years ago. They aren't true. This never happened. While the details of these allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault are complicated, two things are not complicated. One is that women deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, and when they step forward, they should be heard, not silenced. The second is that their stories should be subject to appropriate inquiry and scrutiny. Responsible news organizations should examine and evaluate the full and growing record of inconsistencies in her story, which has changed repeatedly in both small and big ways. We're going to stop right here. Their stories should be subject to appropriate inquiry and scrutiny. This was not the case with Christine Blasey Ford, was it? Everyone was all in. You have to believe the women. You can't doubt her. You can't put her under close scrutiny. She's a victim. This was not the case when they were going up against Brett Kavanaugh. Not in any way. Also, responsible news organizations should examine and evaluate the full and growing record of inconsistencies in her story, which has changed repeatedly in both small and big ways. First, responsible news organizations should examine and evaluate. In other words, it's time for the news media to dig in and find every bit of dirt on this woman possible. This is him dog whistling to the news organizations, to CNN, MSNBC, and the rest. It's time for you to dig up every bit of dirt on this woman you can find. Go ahead. Destroy her. That's what this says. Inconsistencies in her story, which has changed repeatedly in both small and big ways. If you're like me and you've been following this story, I haven't talked about it much here because it's been developing. But one thing about this story is its consistency. It hasn't changed. Her details, which have come out, have stayed the same. When she has told her story, it has been consistent. The only thing that's been changing is the number of people corroborating her story. That's what's changing. There hasn't been inconsistency in her story. If we compare what she is claiming to what Christine Blasey Ford claimed against Brett Kavanaugh, the difference is like daylight and dark. Christine Blasey Ford couldn't get her story corroborated. Even her, quote, best friend, end quote, couldn't substantiate her claims. On the other hand, this young woman, her brother, her neighbor, other people also have come forward to say, yes, she did tell us about this happening back then. A recording of her mother calling the Larry King show on CNN has surfaced and asking questions about what to do in a situation like that. There is a lot more corroboration. A lot. Worlds more corroboration. And much more consistency. So Joe Biden, in this one part of this lengthy statement, is telling the press to dig up every bit of dirt on her possible, and he's making the assertion that her story is inconsistent, and it is changing, constantly changing in large and small ways. It's important right now to remember something. Joe Biden always has been, and always will be, a compulsive liar. He is a thief, stealing the work of other people and calling it his own. He has made claims about things which have been disproven time and time again. And there are others who will corroborate stories about him behaving in this way, supposedly when he was grieving the loss of his wife. You must keep this in mind. Joe Biden is a progressive politician, and the truth is a very inconvenient thing for progressive politicians unless it happens to promote their cause. And truth very rarely promotes a progressive politician's cause. Let's move forward. But this much bears emphasizing. She has said she raised some of these issues with her supervisor and senior staffers from my office at the time. They, both men and women, have said unequivocally that she never came to them and complained or raised issues. News organizations that have talked with literally dozens of former staffers have not found one, not one, who corroborated her allegations in any way. Indeed, many of them spoke to the culture of an office that would not have tolerated harassment in any way, as indeed I would have. Now, how else would his loyal staffers respond? She says she filed a complaint back in 93. She doesn't have a record of this alleged complaint. The papers from my Senate years that I donated to the University of Delaware do not contain personnel files. It is the practice of senators to establish a library. Now, do you know that he has blocked, that the University of Delaware has sealed all of these files and will not allow anybody to look at them to verify his claims? And did you also know that he has had Senate staffers, he has had members of his staff go look through all of this? Why? Could it be possible that he sent them to look through these files and to find these allegations and these complaints and make sure they're not among these files when they're finally released? Considering who we're dealing with, I would say that's very likely. This is the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, May 1st, 2020. Let's get back into Joe Biden for a minute here. I've got other things I want to talk about, but we need to deal with creepy Uncle Joe. I mean, there are things I want to get to. Like, did you know that experts were surprised to find there was no evidence of COVID-19 infection increases because of Wisconsin's in-person voting? Remember how the Democrats all pitched a fit and said the Republicans wanted everybody to die because they wouldn't allow vote by mail? They insisted everybody vote in person, as they should. They said, well, that just means the infections are going to spread. Death rates are going to go up. No, didn't happen. I hope to have time to look at that. But moving forward, operatives for Joe Biden's presidential campaign have reportedly looked through the secret Senate files that may potentially contain information about former aide Tara Reid's sexual assault allegation against the presumptive Democratic nominee. Reid, who worked for Biden at the time, claims that the then Delaware senator assaulted her in 1993. I won't go into details. You've seen them all everywhere. According to a Business Insider report, Biden campaign operatives were sent to look through those files, which are housed at the University of Delaware, in the spring of 2019, just after he launched his presidential bid. Why would that be? Would it be because they knew there was compromising information there that needed to be made invisible? To vanish? Yeah. The university made clear, however, that no one has accessed the files since mid-March of this year, when the school closed due to the coronavirus pandemic. So what we're seeing here is that people have been accessing Joe Biden's files up until the middle of March this year, 6 weeks ago. People have been accessing these files. These people have known what was coming. and they've been doing a little scrubbing, apparently. The archived files, which are sealed to the public, span Biden's 36-year Senate career and have been kept under lock and key by the university since 2012. The university previously said it planned to make the files publicly available 2 years after Biden's last day in public office, which would have been January 20th of last year. But after Biden decided to run for president, the timetable was revised until 2 years after Biden retires from public life, or 2 years after December 31st, 2019, or whichever comes later. Thus far, the university has stood by its refusal to release the files, despite mounting pressure for them to unseal the documents. Tara Reid suspects that the archive may contain corroborating evidence from her for her claims, such as a sexual harassment complaint she allegedly filed with the Senate in 1993. Reid told Business Insider that Biden's chief of staff at the time, Ted Kaufman, took notes during a meeting she had with him about Biden's harassment, though he claims the meeting never occurred. She argues, he's now denying that we ever had the meeting, and I watched him take notes. Those notes would be in my personnel file, along with sick days or any kind of extra notes that I turned in. Reid has previously called on the university to release some or all of the documents, which she says could contain a host of other evidence as well. She told Fox News earlier this week, I believe the archive will have my complaint form, as well as my separation letter and other documents. Maybe if other staffers that have tried to file complaints would come to light, why are they under seal? And why won't they be released to the public? It doesn't help that the University of Delaware board members have close personal and financial ties with the former vice president. Another thing that should make you go, So, Creepy Uncle Joe has personal and financial ties, whether they be donors or people he's in business with or whatever, with people at the University of Delaware who are protecting his sealed files and keeping them from being made public. And members of his campaign staff have accessed these files. It doesn't take a genius to come to the conclusion that they have known this was coming. They knew they had to cover their backsides. They knew they had to make certain things disappear. And they've been busy doing so. So that he can say, oh, sure, have a look. And when we do look, we won't find what is supposed to be there because they've had plenty of time to make it go away. This is politics. This is how political manipulators, deceivers, the political animals, the weasels in Washington, D.C., this is how they work. The only people who can be guilty are the people who accuse them of wrongdoing. It's a sad situation, a very sad situation. The political atmosphere in Washington, D.C. is toxic. The political atmosphere in Washington, D.C. favors the criminal, the professional politician, over those who are seeking truth and justice. It's almost like the old Superman saying, truth, justice, and the American way. Well, that's a joke to professional politicians. There is no truth, but what they say is true. And that's sad. Very sad. We're seeing it play out with Corona right now. It's become a political football. It's being used to damage a president. Moving over to Newsmax.com, there's an article by John Blosser called David Stockman to Newsmax TV, Trump is a victim of malpractice by medical advisors. On Newsmax TV's Spicer & Company, David Stockman, the head of the Office of Management and Budget under President Reagan and the father of Reaganomics, said President Trump is the victim of malpractice by his doctors. Stockman says the American population is actually three countries, those under 16, who have suffered only five deaths from coronavirus, but suffer an average of 44,000 deaths per year from other causes. Were you aware of that, by the way? There have only been 5 people under the age of 16 who have died from coronavirus. There are those from 16 to 64 and those over 64 who experienced the highest death rate by far. He says, what we should be doing is keeping the schools open, the commerce open, the marketplace and jobs open, and sheltering and isolating and protecting and treating and assisting the elderly, especially those that have 1 or 2 or 3 diseases which are especially vulnerable to this virus. By the way, that's what they did in Sweden. Instead, he said, the president's medical advisors recommended one size fits all to cope with this coronavirus. That is upside down and, excuse my French, ass backwards when it comes to what we should be doing. But that's Washington. That's government. It's always one size fits all, and it never fits anyone. Instead, he says, however, Stockman said, we have an economy falling apart because Democrats are now digging in, trying to exaggerate enormously the threat of this thing and supporting mayors and governors who are basically sabotaging their own economies. And then they come whining to Washington for bailouts because their revenues are drying up. Stockman said, I've never seen anything this crazy. I've never seen a hysteria like this. We are literally destroying the fiscal viability of this country. He also took a few shots at Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He said, he's no hero in my view. He's a pretentious windbag, as far as I'm concerned, and his advice should be totally ignored. When you have a risk of death for grandparents and great-grandparents that is 7,600 times larger than for kids and 20 times larger than for the working population, it is bad advice, even medically, to tell the president to shut down the whole country. Let's go back up. I want to go back up to a previous paragraph. Stockman says, we have an economy falling apart because Democrats are now digging in, trying to exaggerate enormously the threat of this thing and supporting mayors and governors who are basically sabotaging their own economies. And then they come whining to Washington for bailouts because their revenues are drying up. We are watching this happen. It's in the news on a regular basis. I talked about Birmingham. I live just outside of Birmingham, Alabama. I talked about their edict, which went into effect today, talking about the steps forward we will take to open things back up again. But the restrictions are incredibly weird, strange. What will happen is the economy will suffer greatly, and cities like Birmingham will go to their state capitals in Alabama, that would be Montgomery. Montgomery will go to Washington, D.C. with their hands out, looking for help, because they did something that damaged their economy that was not necessary. And because most of these economies, most of these state and local governments, like the ones I'm dealing with around here, are run by Democrats. They have a vested interest, a political interest, in making the damage as bad as possible so that they can point to the president and say, it's his fault these things went bad. It's his fault we don't have the money. We have things dying here that they should be paying us. And it all comes back around to November of this year. As I've been saying for days upon days now, it's all pointing to Election Day. Because the people who are professionals, lifelong professionals in the business of government, these people, they don't care about what is actually true or false or right or wrong. They care about power and control. And that power and control will come literally at any cost, even if it's your job, your livelihood, your home being lost because you can't pay the mortgage payments. You suffering from illnesses which could have been prevented, but you couldn't afford to keep paying for your health insurance. because your job ended and it's no longer a benefit, it's a COBRA payment. It doesn't matter that you are suffering, or your neighbors are suffering, or your family is suffering. What matters to these people is getting an inconvenient person out of the way. And that inconvenient person is President Donald Trump. Am I paranoid? Am I being weird? No. I observe behavior, and this is typical progressive behavior. Future politician. It is the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along. Hope you're having a big day. Hope you've been just enjoying things so far. I mean, it's a 1 hour show. I know sometimes it feels like
6.5 hours late.
Yeah, I know. I'll go off on a tangent sometimes. And it's funny, I'll realize in the middle of it, I'm losing everybody. I just am right now. I start talking about geeky stuff, like my computer project. I'll get off into that, and people go, come on, come on. Yeah, that's life. It is the Friday edition, the first day of May. Good to have you along today. Hope you have a great weekend. And yeah, we have a weekend ahead. I know some of you are like, wait a minute, isn't every day the weekend? Well, yeah, well, in a way, yes, it has. It is. It's just odd. Hey, can we get back to politics again? Because that's kind of the middle of everything that we do around here is kind of politics. It's the core of the perspective, so to speak. You know, the guys over at Project Veritas. Yeah, James O'Keefe and his bunch. The latest video he's dropped. It begins, we know there are many unanswered questions during the pandemic. We've been out in the street talking to some folks who are on the front lines, talking to the unsung heroes of the people of New York City. And we've talked to these unsung heroes and we've learned some troubling things, some things that should disturb us. O'Keefe interviewed New York City funeral directors. Funeral directors. And these people were very skeptical of the legitimacy of COVID deaths. They're writing COVID on every death certificate, one director says. He's interviewed a handful of these people in New York City, funeral directors, and they're saying, hey, these people aren't all dying of COVID. They can't be. I'm skipping down the article. It's all in the show notes. Grab the show notes today. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. Also, if you'll check on the Facebook feed, you'll see it pops up on the Facebook feed today as well, too. Every day. I usually, just almost as soon as I get through with the podcast, I compile the show notes and I post them. So you can check them. Usually a few minutes after 9 o'clock Central every weekday, the show notes go up and you can check them. You can go find the articles that I refer to. I read through these things and I jump off and make commentary. You can find the source material. And very often in these articles, there's also links to other articles and other sources for more substantiation. You need to have the information. More information's better. So go get the show notes today and check this article. It's interesting. I'm going to skip down a ways. Let's see here. Michael Lanza, he's a funeral director at Colonial Funeral Home in New York. He says, so I'm going to turn around and say, you know, like not everybody that we have here that has COVID on the death certificate died of COVID. Can I prove that? No, but that's my suspicion. They're putting it on everybody's death certificate to make life easier for them because like the causes of death get approved, by the way, if you write COVID. I mean, listen, they're just pushing things out there because they're overwhelmed and it's just easier to write COVID on everything. Asked how often he thought such a thing was happening. He answered, quite a lot, quite a lot. I think they're not doing it to help the mayor. I think the mayor is ordering it, you know, but because the more deaths that they report from COVID, the more money they can go back and ask the federal government for. If they put 100 COVIDs, I'm going to tell you 100 people didn't have COVID. They're not even testing these people. Joseph Antioco, funeral director at Schaefer Funeral Home, says they're putting COVID on a lot of death certificates because people who are going to their hospital or any kind of respiratory distress, respiratory problems, pneumonia, the flu, flu-like symptoms, lead into the COVID-19. So you know it's hard for them to put their finger on it. To me, all you're doing is padding the statistics. You're putting people that have that have COVID-19, even if they didn't have COVID-19. You're making the death rate for New York City a lot higher than it should be. A lot of people have been dying at home. And the problem is, the medical examiner, if you have a private doctor, the medical examiner would speak to the private doctor over the phone, clear it up. Bang, bang, it's all done. But now, if you don't have a private doctor and you're under any medical care, they're automatically putting down on the death certificate COVID-19. Because they don't want to go, they're so overwhelmed, A and B, they're not even going out to the houses anymore. They would go out to the house, they would investigate the scene, they would do testing at the scene, then come up with the conclusion as to he had heart disease. But now they're putting everything as COVID-19. And then there's another guy, Josephine DiMichele. DiMichele, that's it. President of the DiMichele and Sons Funeral Home says, the guy that I just buried a little while ago from Long Island National Cemetery, they called me from the nursing home. They said, did Raymond have COVID-19? She said, well, no. It was failure to thrive, but we're assuming they all have it. And I'm all, why would you assume? Why aren't they all in the hospital? She had no answer. I can't answer you, she said. They put it down on Raymond's death certificate. He didn't have COVID-19. She continued, I had one that was autopsied because the sister was famous. And apparently, and I don't know who the Supreme Court justice is, but the Supreme Court justice was related to this family. And she says, I know my sister didn't die of COVID-19. She said she had Alzheimer's and they didn't suction her. You have to suction because they forget how to swallow. And right away, they put down COVID-19 on a death certificate. And the Supreme Court justice, whoever it is, contacted the hospital. They did an independent autopsy. Bingo. No COVID-19. So Project Veritas is talking to the people who are really at the end of the line. Literally the end of the line in the process of death, and learning that a lot of people in this one particular area, in this progressive stronghold, New York City, that their deaths are being attributed to COVID-19 when their deaths were not COVID-19. Why? Politics. To increase the death numbers. To make it look like more people died from this pandemic in order to reap more government funding and recoup more money from the government. And why would they do that? That's actually very simple. Because progressive politics is financially ignorant. It's idiotic. When it comes to economics, progressives are living in a fantasy world. And they double down on their fantasy, and the fantasies keep failing. And it costs more money and more money and loses more money and more money. They're constantly digging holes and insisting they're right. They're going to keep digging because they're right. And when the walls start collapsing in on them, they cry out for help. And when somebody says, what was the cause of this? They lie. Because they will never admit that their policies were the cause of all the problems. And so now, very conveniently, there's a pandemic. There's a state of emergency. And they can blame their problems on whatever caused the state of emergency. Because they will never own up to their own incompetence. They will blame their failures on anything but their policies. If you examine politics over the years, you will see this is a consistent, never-failing thing. It always happens exactly this way. They propose solutions, which are broad, sweeping, one-size-fits-all. The solutions don't work. And when the solutions don't work, they lose money. They blow huge holes in their economy. And then they blame everything but their policies. And as a result, today, people are being diagnosed with a disease that they'd never had as a cause of death, so that they can be added to the role of the list of people, the numbers. They're just numbers to these people. These people who have died, loved ones, are just numbers to these politicians. Numbers which will get them more money and help them blame their incompetence on something completely other. And that is progressive politics in America today. And that is why in November, we have to vote against it. And right now, I've got to get out of your way, out of the weekend's way, and let you have it. Have a good one. We'll see you back Monday.
Take the next 2 days off. How's that?